Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from rigorous rampages to raucous rages. And today, we're talking about the Remoraz.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast Fireball.
Hey Brian.
Hey Will.
How you doing today?
I'm killing it. I'm ready to learn about the lore of the Dungeons and Dragons multiverse.
Okay. Well, today we're talking about another D&D original, the Remoraz. And before we get into it, do you know anything about the Remoraz? Have you heard of the Remoraz?
I have heard of the Remoraz in like just probably passing. I don't know. I feel like when you do a Dungeons and Dragons show long enough, like even when you don't know anything, eventually you're going to hear like the terms of most things get passed around.
Right.
I think it's something like that. But okay. Upon opening the stat block, which is going to be my duty to read, mm-hmm. I was shocked.
Taken aback?
To see what this creature looked like, definitely.
Indeed.
I was not expecting that.
The Remoraz, is also known as the polar worm. From beneath the snow and ice bursts a Remoraz in a cloud of steam, its body pulsing with internal fire. Wing-like fins flare from the back of the creature's head, and its wide mouth brims with jagged teeth. This Arctic apex predator is utterly bizarre and unlike any other creature I can name or liken it to. It also doesn't seem to have any ancient mythological origins or influences, and it has been noted that the most likely outside influence on the creature's creation came from the monsters in the novels of Robert E. Howard, the writer of Conan the Barbarian and protege of H.P. Lovecraft. As for who created the Remoraz, well, that is sort of up for debate as well, with shared credit going to Errol Otis and Rob Kuntz, who illustrated and wrote respectively for D&D in the early days. Regardless, this horrifying monstrosity should strike fear into the hearts of your players and make any of them think twice about venturing out into the Arctic wastes and becoming the stars of their very own creature feature film, where they are hunted down and devoured, never to be seen again. So let's get into
it. Tremors. I don't know what Tremors they're on, but it sounds like Tremors like 5, like
yeah,
ice Tremors.
Tremors 5, ice Tremors.
Get ass blasted.
I love the original Tremors, by the way. That's a fantastic movie.
It's a pretty solid flick.
I love it.
Tremors 3 is sus.
I don't remember enjoying any of the sequels.
I mean, I feel like they did all the tricks in the first one, you know? Like, get on top of the buildings. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Oh, shit, it's not working. Sorry, spoilers for Tremors, an ancient sci-fi movie.
It's fantastic. Weighing in at more than 10,000 pounds, the Remoraz resembles an enormous hard-shelled worm or centipede with dozens of insectoid legs, faceted eyes, and a wide mouth brimming with jagged teeth. The back of its head bristles with a pair of wing-like fins that stretch roughly quarterway down their 20-foot-long bodies. They are whitish-blue in color, but are offset by protrusions on their back that pulse with a reddish glow from the massive amount of heat their bodies produce. Each segment of the monstrosity consists of a central core or body cavity where the digestive organs are located, surrounded by a network of terrifically strong muscles linked by corded nerves, all sheathed by the worm's rock-hard external insulation and armor. Each segment is supported by a pair of flexible legs covered in similar segmented armor, each leg ending in a foot consisting of a large suction pad and two iron-hard toe talons. These talons serve to propel the Remoraz across the most slippery ice of glaciers where the creature prefers to layer. The wings of a Remoraz... The wings of a Remoraz aid in stability while rearing and lunging, and rarely while slipping and falling, and in regulating body heat as well, but they cannot lift the entire body of the worm. A Remoraz cannot fly. The Remoraz can only raise its head and neck with the aid of these wings.
Oh my gosh. I was going to say this thing sounds so buff. Like,
oh yeah,
rock it's hard buff. Abs, like super good legs, and then it's like, it's got wings, but they suck.
Oh, well, no, oh, the shit. Wings, okay. The wings are help it lift its extremely heavy upper body, so it needs
that. Yeah, that's like it's so buff until like that point, and then it's got to use its wings to just like stand, sort of.
So as Arctic apex predators, Remoras live. By the way, halfway through this notes, I realized that the plural for a Remoras is still just Remoras. So, like, you as a reader of my notes will see that I wrote Remorases for, like, the first, like, seven paragraphs. But then for the back half, I changed it to just Remoras. And I just told myself I'd mentally make a note of it. And now I'm drawing attention to it, and now we're going to move on.
So just for anybody on Patreon that gets to, like, read these notes and listen to episodes, I mean, you probably have to read them after the fact, but, like, they're just know that.
Yeah, indeed. So as Arctic apex predators, Remoras live exclusively in Arctic climates, preying on elk, polar bears, and other creatures sharing their territory. They are very aggressive predators that will devour any animal matter, including humanoids. They have even been known to attack and devour frost giants.
I was going to say.
Yep. They cannot tolerate warm weather, though, having adapted to the cold by generating a furnace-like heat within their bodies. Remoras use their immense eternal heat to burrow through ice and rock of their Arctic homes. When hunting, they burrow deep below the snow and ice and lie in wait for the faint vibrations created by a creature moving above them. So yes, very much like Tremors. then attack from below and surprise their prey, like Tremors. Well, hidden under the tundra, they can lower their body temperature so that the ice and snow around them remains unmelted. That's not like Tremors in any way.
That's not like Tremors. These things. No. Well, wait, hang on. While hidden under the tundra, they can lower their body temperature. Yeah, I don't know about that. Is there something? Is there some Tremors deep cut where they're like they do something with their internal body temp though?
I don't know.
In the third one for sure, because they're like firing a jet out of their asshole, and that's why they call them ass blasters.
I don't remember Tremors 3. I'm sorry, but now I want to go watch it.
Tremors 2 is called Aftershocks. That's a great title.
That is a great
I
do not title.
Think that's a good... Oh, dude, yes! Tremors was made in 1990.
Yes, Tremors you from the 1990s. You remember
the movie Tremors from the 1990s?
Indeed.
The series of movies Tremors. The third one doesn't come out until 2001, though.
Oh, that's a travesty. Remoras have an average hunting range of up to 60 miles. They range all over cold regions when hunting, often wandering far from their lairs, for if they remained in a small area, food there would soon become exhausted. If food is scarce, Remoras sometimes come down off of the high glaciers into the tundra and even to the edge of muskeg regions to hunt. With the exception of mates and mothers and their young, Remoras hunt and lair alone. These creatures will only just barely tolerate the presence of other Remoras in their hunting grounds, with the exception where most game has been hunted to extinction. Then they'll actually fight each other.
That's a lot like the carrion crawler.
Carrion crawler, and that was my initial thought.
Okay.
So when excited by easy prey or angered by prey that eludes it, seems formidable, challenges it, or causes it pain, a Remoras will cause its back protrusions, the blunt horns or projections on its back, to become extremely, extremely hot. By conducting the worm's internal digestive heat by means of internally produced and circulated fluids, this chemical, which is known as thrim, is released from its two stomachs and pumped at great pressure into its insulated back horns. When in this state, simply touching or standing within 5 feet of a Remoras can cause fire damage. A Remoras does not gain or lose heat through its feet or body armor unless the body armor has been broken, except through its back protrusions, of course.
Oh man, so as you beat the crap out of this thing, it could like be, you could probably roleplay it to have like fire or like heat of some kind, like coming out of its broken like carapace.
Yeah, I would definitely do that. I think another thing too is like, so 4th edition had this really cool thing where when you got down to half HP, you were considered bloodied, and there was a lot of monsters that like becoming bloodied would trigger a thing to happen. And I would love to flavor a Remoras in 5e where when you bloody it, it like goes into full rage mode and like a burst of massive heat goes off and everyone needs to make a constitution save not to take extra fire damage that turn.
Yeah, that's fucking cool. Like bosses and platformers, when you get them to half health, they start changing their attack patterns.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Or even in turn-based RPGs, a lot of times bosses, when you get them down to half-life, something happens. Like, I know that's the inner video gamer in me, but I just think it's fucking cool.
It is cool. I think that's cool. It's like the reality of this fight is setting in for this boss. They're starting to take you seriously.
Right, exactly. It's a let me take off these weights.
Yeah, or like you fucking Rock Lee you. Or you damage it in such a way, like in this instance, like because you damage this creature in this way, it's going to have this effect on the environment because that's the nature of this beast. Yeah, so I'm taking it that these creatures kind of like, I don't know like what the expanse of the tundra is like in certain D&D worlds, but I imagine these things are staying away from white dragons.
It just depends. There's a bit of a rivalry in this area because like a white dragon not ready for it or maybe not mature enough is going to get fucking rocked by a Remoraz.
Oh, no shit.
Okay. Yeah, these things are fucking powerful. So, nice. I mean, Remoraz can eat young white dragons. Plus, like, Remoraz got like that heat thing going on. Like, they're good against, they're going to resist all the cold shit a white dragon can do. So, like, it's not so much that I don't think white dragons live in fear of Remoraz, but like they are just, they don't want to fucking deal with one if they don't have to.
Yeah, because they're doing the same, this thing, like this burrowing thing. I remember white dragons kind of like burrowing sometimes and like emerging to like attack.
Yeah, prey. Yeah, they do.
That's interesting. Okay, well, that's kind of cool.
One cool thing that I was thinking of right now is like, I can imagine like you get into a fight with a Remoraz like out on the plains or whatever. I just picture like this big epic fight, and when it's done, like so much heat and shit popped off that like I just picture like the adventurers like looking up from their fight and realizing that they have sunken down like 40 feet into this bank and are just like until they reach like the actual stone ground beneath it, and you know they're just surrounded like they're this crater of melted ice and snow, and at the bottom, which is the Remoraz body and the adventurers who barely took it down.
I know, right? Like all of a sudden you're in like a fucking puddle. Like,
yeah, just the biggest puddle.
The biggest puddle.
That
one
being
might
said,
call big puddles lakes.
Perhaps
a pond.
One might, but we'll have to talk more about that after the short rest.
Indeed.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at visible.com.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga, a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and Set in Space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back. We're at it once more. Goddamn, Zagonzo.
And it's time to talk more about the Remoraz and their three life states. So, okay. Remoraz have three life states: dormant, cold, and heated. Since Remoraz can burn up the energy provided by a large meal in just a few hours of tunneling, moving, or fighting, they spend much of their time in either a dormant or cold state. Dormant being a very sluggish economical condition, and cold being active without heating the back protrusions. Remoraz are always eager to eat, since they are active in proportion to how much they consume. Because of their metabolism, polar worms make ambush their primary hunting mode, and only occasionally travel in search of prey. And Remoraz will lay in wait along a well-traveled road in a cold state. When prey is sighted, the Remoraz heats its back protrusions, then attacks. Remoraz lie dormant through periods when prey is scarce, spending at least one day in five dormant in any case. Dormant periods are always spent in the lair. Given steady food, a Remoraz has amazing regenerative abilities, though, and can regenerate a completely lost pair of legs in 20 days or so, and lesser damage can be healed in half the time.
That's cool. I like the, like, fucking Cyndaquil shit it's got going on. Like, time to fucking turn up.
It does. It's got a Cyndaquil thing going on. A Typhlosion thing, if you will.
Yeah. Is that going to help it? Like, I'm sure that helps it with its burrowing, like moving through the ice.
Yeah, that's the main function for it. All the other stuff is really just icing on top, you know?
For sure. Okay.
Yeah. But I will say it helps them immensely against frost giants who can't handle heat. So.
Right. And we were saying about the white dragon, too. Like, yeah. This is probably, I'm taking it, this is one of the apex predators of these regions.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, like the only thing that challenges this is either a really big settlement of frost giants that can like kind of like keep these guys under control, or a really mature and well-established white dragon. Like anything else is just not going to measure up in this area. Like god, yeah, yetis.
Sure, oh, go ahead. I'm sure since these creatures like just sort of lie in wait, there must be some way to test for that. Like, maybe, I hate to say it, but, like, if frost giants have, like, a pack of animals that they're just going to, like, send out ahead of them.
Oh, yeah, like a canary in a cage?
Yeah, almost. Like, we're gonna just kind of, like, let the dogs out in front while we go on this, like, merchant journey. And then if, like, they get eated, we're good. You know,
yeah, like, yeah, I could see them like, yeah, let the dire wolves out first. I will say we talked about this a bit in the Frost Giants episode, but like there is a sense of like of a mark of passage for like the ultimate champions amongst Frost Giant kind, where they go out and try and hunt a Remoraz to kill with their bare hands.
Oh man.
So like that is a thing. The stats don't really measure up for it, because I feel like a Frost Giant would get rocked by one of these guys. But maybe it's more like they fight a young Remoraz rather than a fully grown adult one, because dear God.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm taking it for a Frost Giant. They're not very smart. It's probably hard to find. They're like, yeah, they're like trying to be predator, but bad.
Right, exactly. So a Remoraz's lair usually consists of a number of large, smoothly rounded tunnels in ice and snow or rock, gradually descending into a large central chamber. Tunnels in ice and snow will the tunnels in the ice and snow will be very slippery, as the Remoraz's hot back repeatedly melts the snow, leaving it to refreeze. With its numerous hard feet, the Remoraz moves at full speed on sheer ice and has no problems in its own lair and tunnel complex. The central chamber is only about twice the width and length of the Remoraz itself, while the central chamber of a nesting pair is about twice the size of that and may even contain icy stalactites from the ceiling. Remoraz have no use for treasure as we know it. Any treasure found will consist of belongings left behind by devoured prey, either scattered about the icy wastes or on the floor of the Remoraz's lair. Such treasure rarely consists of arms or armor, since these are usually destroyed or lost in combat, and will never be anything that cannot survive the extreme cold and inadvertent pummeling by the Remoraz's constant traveling over it. A Remoraz will take prey into its lair only when it is threatened by a storm or by other predators. If its meal is threatened by other smaller predators too nimble or too numerous for the polar worm to slay, or if it is a male feeding a nesting female or a female hunting with its young.
So this last section was super important for a question I had earlier, which was like,
okay.
Like, I don't know if I said it out loud or not, though, but like finding one of these things seemed mm-hmm. difficult, like that thing with the dogs. But you could also like kind of know you're in a territory of one of these things by like the way the ice is, right? Like if it's got this certain smooth, like, you know, it's a worm, so it's going to be moving in like a certain pattern.
That's when you're in its lair. That it's going to have that weirdness.
I was thinking like some of the surface areas of where it's like traveling more often. Like you might be in its.
I mean, it will leave signs, and if you are like a ranger or somebody who knows how to look for those signs, you're going to see them fairly obviously. Like, oh shit, there's a Remoraz that makes this territory its home.
Yeah,
but like, as for like telling it it's nearby right now, you're probably not going to get that. And then if you see some tunnels in a big ice boulder and they're like super extra smooth, then you could be like, oh shit, this is its lair. Let's get the hell out of here kind of deal.
Yeah. That's more what I was saying. Like, I understand not being, the whole point of it is not being able to fucking like find this thing. Right. Like,
yeah, that's kind of their deal.
Great hunter.
Yeah, exactly. So Remoraz mate in the late summer and stay together for 2 months before departing to live solitary existences. They mate only in glacial tunnels and icy caverns when food is plentiful. Remoraz of different sexes will instinctively wander out of their own normal ranges and seek one another out, establishing a nesting lair after they meet. They signal their presence at such rutting times by great mournful roars, sounding at times like great wolves, and repeatedly rearing up and flapping their vestigial wings to attract notice.
Jeez. Oh man.
Remember,
like the moonlight behind them flapping their wings.
Remoraz mate every year but can produce offspring only 3 or 4 times in a lifetime. The female lays a clutch of 1 or 2 gray-blue eggs, remaining with eggs at all times, coiling around them to keep them warm. If the eggs are left in the freezing cold for only 1 minute, they will never hatch young Remoraz. During this gestation period, the developing young change from helpless soft worms to miniature Remoraz and eat their way around the thick nutrient walls of their own eggs to freedom. The young stay in the nesting lair for approximately 4 months after hatching. Afterwards, the young Remoraz are driven forth from their lair by their mother to fend for themselves.
Man, that's super tricky. Like, you really have to, like, 1 minute of just not attending to the egg is enough to make it bad.
Yeah, which is why she stays there the whole time, and then the male brings food to her.
Yeah, that's cool. Are they doing, like, the bird thing? Or is it just, like, I killed this thing and didn't eat it. Here it is.
I think it's just, I killed this thing and didn't eat it. Here it is.
You don't think they're vomiting into each other's mouths?
No. God, that's so disgusting, Sally. Okay. Please.
Moving on. What bird do? That's what birds do.
Yeah, but that's what birds do to their young. Like, this is the male bringing the female who's coiled around the egg's food.
I mean, it's happening.
Remoraz females are generally larger than males, but they are otherwise identical in powers and appearance. Remoraz have average lifespans of about 30 years, so they live a pretty long time.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not frost super long.
Giant, not super long, but I don't know. When I think of like a wild animal, 30 years is a long time. So.
Yeah, how long do bears live? These things remind me of giant worm-shaped bears.
Sure. I don't
they're
know. I'm just going to randomly guess to say a bear probably out in the wild is living about 15 years. I don't know.
How long bear live, Google?
Are you not actually love. Looking it up?
How long does bear love? It said forever. When a bear loves, it's forever.
Okay, well, you look that up. I'm going to move on in the notes.
Let me go with the most. Like, I'm going to go with polar bear here.
Okay, sure. I guess I'll wait for you.
It changed polar bear lifespan. It changed my search query lifespan. Oh, it said love span. Polar bears are forever too. 30 years. Polar bears live for 30 years.
Oh, there you have it. So there it is. Remoraz. They're just a big worm shaped bear.
They're just a big worm shaped bears. You heard it on the Dungeon Cast.
Frost giant hunters are famous for scouring the icy wastes for Remoraz nests and eggs. The giants prize young Remorazes, which can be trained from hatchling to obey commands and guard the giants' icy citadels. Their eggs are also highly valued at 500 gold pieces an egg and are eagerly sought by traders and merchants of exotic goods.
There's been a couple things now that have been listed that are like super worth. So like this thing has really hard armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
On its body.
And that'd be cool. That, Remoraz, like a body, a suit of armor made of Remoraz hide. That'd be cool.
That would be sick. Like if you're like an ice barbarian. Like, yeah, that'd be
super dope.
Mm-hmm. I guess they called Tundra. What's that elemental barbarian?
The Storm Herald barbarian?
Yeah, that one. Tundra was one of the options. So like,
yes,
I know you can kind of fluidly change them as you progress in levels. But yeah, you got that. What was it called? The Thrym was the juice inside that makes the heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems like something very farmable. And now this 500 gold pieces for an egg.
It's pretty cool. Exactly. Yeah,
there's a lot to garner from this monster, like how you would almost raid a dragon's hide.
It is the treasure. I got one final fact before we move on to the stat block, and it's just that in the 3.5 edition monster manual, it states that Remoraz have no languages or ability to speak, but in the second edition monstrous manual, it claims that Remorazes do have a language, but that the language consists exclusively of roaring, bellowing, and howling.
It's nasty.
I just thought it was really funny. I don't know why.
So it almost like whales, I guess.
I mean, but like it has an intelligence of like 4 in all editions. So like it shouldn't really have a language. I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah, when does language start? Around like 5 or 6?
It's 7. It's got to start 7? Around 7 if you ask me. But that's just me. I don't know. Any other questions before we get into the stat block?
I really wanted to do a fun Vegeta joke when you said final fact.
Oh.
I was like, we should stand here and charge it up first before we say it and see if the audience can block it. But we're past that now.
Yeah.
You fired it far too early.
Okay, let's get into the stat block.
Okay. I should have been pulling that up while I was saying that good joke about Vegeta. Okay, I got it. God, this thing is fucking horrendous. Jesus. Yeah,
it's very scary.
Yeah, like the face of it, I think it's because it's in this image, like the jaw kind of almost looks dislocated in a way.
Yeah. Like I mean, this is a monster that I would not have to reskin for our sci-fi alien adventure in SuperQuest Saga because it already looks like a fucking alien.
Yeah, not like Vague Walrus.
No, not like the Vague Walrus I had you guys fight. Yeah.
So we have the Remoraz, which is a huge monstrosity of unaligned. That tracks. Its armor class is 17, natural armor. Its hit points are 195 or 17 D12 plus 85. Wow. Then we got a speed of 30 feet with a burrow speed of 20 feet. I kind of feel like that should be flipped almost.
Well, I see what you're saying. It's just it's hard to burrow. And, you know, not only are they burrowing, but like they are melting and then evaporating water.
Yeah. And so now that I say it out loud, and if I saw these stats flipped, I would have the same complaint. Like, how can you burrow faster than you can walk, idiot?
Yeah.
So exactly. It actually kind of makes sense that it's written the way it is. Indeed. So we do large numbers here. Strength is going to be 24. Dex, 13. Huh. Yeah, that's big strength. Plus 7 strength.
My God.
Fuck. Dex, 13. Con, 21. That's nice. Nice con. Yeah, it's big HP. Intelligence is a 4, like you said. Wisdom is a 10. And charisma is a... You want to hazard a guess, Will, at what the charisma is?
Hold on. Okay, before I do, what was its intelligence again?
4.
Its charisma is a 2.
It's a 5, but you're right there.
Oh, my God. It's got some personality to it.
Yeah, it has to be able to do its fucking howl dance to mate.
Fair enough.
That's the bare minimum.
You
got to
have some charisma for the howl dance.
It's going to swipe. What is it? Swipe right? Is that the good one? I don't know. I've never used online dating, but
me either. Well, that's not true. But anyways, moving on.
The equivalent of it swiping right is like doing this fucking dance. Good. It's gonna swipe right at a -3. I'm just assuming swiping right is the good one. Damage immunities are cold and fire. You're not gonna get. That's crazy.
Oh, it's straight immune.
This is insane. It's immune to cold and fire at the same time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's pretty badass.
It's a fucking giant, what's the little bear thing that lives in the ice? It's very, very small, microscopic creature.
Oh, a tardigrade.
A tardigrade. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of the tardigrade. You cannot
affect much like a tardigrade.
It cannot affect it with temperature. You also can't affect it. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, this is a white dragon's nightmare.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You also can't affect it with the dark, unless it's magical dark, because it has dark vision of 60 feet.
Does it have tremor sense?
It also has tremor sense of 60 feet.
Nice.
And a passive perception of 10, which seems kind of low.
Low. Yeah, but whatever.
No languages. Languages is dash dash.
Tell that to the second edition Monstrous Manual.
Yeah, right? I feel like they should be able to, like, in whale-like fashion, communicate over long distances through, like, tremors in the ground.
God, that'd be terrifying.
With their raucous howling. Maybe not, though. Who knows? Let's see. Challenge rating is 11. Very high. 7,200 XP. There are people out there that use XP. They reached out. They said they did.
Although, I think it was overwhelmingly more along our end where it's not really used.
It absolutely was overwhelming. Like, you are in the minority, XP people. Good on you. I'm sure it's a, I'm sure it's a rewarding system.
I'm sure it's cool.
Proficiency bonus is +4. Now we got the heated body feature. A creature that touches the Remoraz or hits it with a melee attack while within 5 feet of it takes 10 or 3d6 fire damage.
Nice.
So if you're meleeing this thing, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, unless you have some sort of fire resistance. If you're a tiefling or you got some sort of special armor or amulet.
Right, yeah. So, or hits it with a melee. This is not a save. This is nothing.
No, it's if just, you it's do this super thing, goddamn this happens. Hot. You're fighting a lava monster, basically.
Right. That's essentially what you're doing. Now we have the actions. We have Bite, which is a melee weapon attack with +11 to hit, with a reach of 10 feet, which is super cool. It's another, like, carry-on crawler kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
One target, it's going to hit for 40 or 6d10 +7 piercing damage, plus 10 3d6 fire damage. So you're going to be doing roughly 50 damage on this hit.
What was and the challenge rating on this guy again?
11.
Yeah, pretty up there.
So you're also going to get a grapple off of this with an escape DC of 17 if the target is a creature. Now, until this grapple ends, the target is restrained and the Remoraz can't bite another target. So that bite is the best bite I've read, I think, on the show so far.
It might be.
It's way better than the Beholder bite, which is just sort of average.
Yeah.
Then we have the Swallow. The Remoraz is nasty. The Remoraz makes one bite attack against a medium or smaller creature it's grappling. If the attack hits, the creature takes the bite's damage and is swallowed, and the grapple ends. You hear a new kind of grapple after that, an intestinal grapple. Right. While swallowed, the creature is blinded and restrained, like I said, and it is total cover against attacks and other effects outside the Remoraz, so you will be safe inside of it. But you're also going to take 21 or 66 acid damage at the start of each of the Remoraz's turns. Yeah, so you'll be immediately digested.
Damage. Yeah, immediately.
If the Remoraz takes 30 damage or more on a single turn from a creature inside of it, the Remoraz must succeed on a DC 15 Constitution saving throw at the end of that turn or regurgitate all swallowed creatures, which fall prone in a space within 10 feet of the Remoraz. I would assume that is 10 feet out in front of it or whichever way its mouth was pointed. If the Remoraz dies, a swallowed creature is no longer restrained and it can escape from the corpse using 15 feet of movement, exiting prone.
Interesting. So but interesting.
Yeah, if this thing dies, you will know about it because all of its muscles will stop working.
Indeed.
And then you can escape.
So what do you think of the Remoraz? What do you think of this monster?
This creature is insane. It's crazy good. It's like a really... this is going to be a tough fight for most parties, especially if you're going to, like... I don't know why how you can justify throwing two of these out at once unless they're, like, mates.
Oh, yeah. You could do mates. I thought... When you said justify, I was thinking you meant, like... Just so, like, what kind of party could take on two of these?
Oh, I mean, like, obviously, a party can deal out 400 HP worth of damage on 17 AC. But like, man, this thing, the swallowed thing, is pretty crazy. That's wild. What do you do to do 30 damage in a single turn? From inside this thing, you pretty much have to be a caster, I think, right?
Paladin could pop it off.
Paladin could do it. Paladin's a caster.
Action surging fighter might be able to sneak attack rogue. I'm not sure if you could get a sneak attack from inside.
I would argue you're going to get that sneak attack if you're inside this thing.
Yeah.
Guess what?
I mean, it's arguable.
Never saw this coming.
But yeah, there's certain classes that are going to be at a disadvantage in that regard. That's true.
Yeah, like what's the ranger going to do inside of this thing? Like, I know the ranger, higher
the
level.
Ranger might be one of them for sure. Yeah,
I would say you can't use a range attack inside of this thing unless it's a spell. I bet you
a bard would be hard pressed to get the fuck out of there too.
You know, I think that happened in Critical Role, and spoilers for season one Critical Role, but I'm pretty sure their bard got stuck inside of a guy
and couldn't
inside
get
of
out.
A dragon. And I think they Bigsby's handed their way out.
Interesting.
So yeah, that Bigby's hand could do it. Okay. I guess.
So my thoughts on this monster are, this thing's brilliant. I think it's a fucking cool monster, and it's super original, and it's got a lot of like things you wouldn't think about. Like when you think about fighting an Arctic monster, you're not thinking about fire damage, you know what I mean?
No.
But in this case you have to.
And it makes sense. Why?
Yeah, and it makes sense. They make it make sense. It's a really cool idea. I've never really given the Ramirez much attention, but it's fucking awesome. I like this monster a lot.
Yeah, it's tastefully colored.
It's got a cool color. It looks it looks truly horrifying, like legitimately very scary.
Yeah, I think this is up there with like dragon level fear for me, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
The centipede legs and the it's got enough dragon and bug things going on to make me terrified of it.
It really does. Yeah.
It's a big dragon bug. It's like a big. It looks like a big dragon bug now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it does. I think we can get ready for a long rest, though.
No wonder it's going to swallow you. Yeah, let's do it. Let's get ready for that longy. Hey, everybody, welcome to the long rest where we're building our beholder in the year, this fine year of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
Aging like wine as we create these monstrosities. So let's see what we got here, the Remoraz, huh? Okay, what are we going to do, Will? What's it going to look like? What's the feature?
So the feature I picked from our Remoraz is the wings that are behind the head of the Remoraz. We're going to give these fin-like wings to our beholder, and basically I picture them kind of wrapping around like the upper part of the beholder orb, and kind of like almost like a reptilian crest. It kind of resting
like a halo in a Renaissance painting,
kinda, and it basically kind of dividing up the tentacles. So like we'll have like a few tentacles on one side, a few on the other, a few on the other, and a few on the other. So yeah.
Hey, so I want to ask: is this like one solid piece that's kind of like making a big, like turning this beholder into like a satellite almost, kind of on the top part, or is
each tentacle has a
set of wings on it?
No, not the tentacle. The orb itself has the wings.
Like, where are they? I'm having trouble picturing this.
Okay, so let's pull up a Remoraz real quick.
I got it.
So yeah, these things are going to like be on the side, the upper sides of the beholder's head, for lack of a better
term. Oh, I see. So so instead of on this like long worm body, they'll be on the spherical body,
which is
in the same sort of fashion.
There'll be like two fan-like frills.
They almost kind of remind me of fucking nasty butterfly wings now. I love this.
Yes, exactly. Very much so.
Okay. So for the beam, fuck that shit. It's going to just have a mouth. This is not a beam. This is a
devouring tentacle.
I guess it should be it's going to be a devouring tentacle. It has room for one person, and it'll just start it'll do the bite swallow combo if you're too close. So I guess if you're within 10 feet of the beholder, you'll have to make, let's see, I guess it'll just grapple you with this hit. It's literally, I'm just going to lift the bite and swallow off of the
Remoraz. Yeah, that's how I would do it. It would just be the same attack.
Yep. So you got to do 30 or more damage from inside that tentacle or spider arm or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. To get the hell out.
The beholder will do a DC 15 con save.
God, that's horrifying. That's so scary.
God, you have to do the 30 damage and it has to
it has to fail the save.
Yep.
And then you just get vommed.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah. There weren't too many options for us with the, like, this is a great creature, but it's pretty streamlined in what it can do.
Yeah, very straightforward. So, but I'm happy with our choices. Anything you want to add before we call it a game?
Check out our social media, Instagram and Twitter, for our latest contest to win Van Richten's Guide to... I did the same thing. What Ravenloft, the fuck is this place called?
Man. It's Ravenloft. The easiest part of it to remember.
I know, the Van Richten part you think would be harder, but now that seems to be what's been cemented.
Right.
So there it is. On Twitter, you just share a link to our show, one of our shows, anything you like, Super Quest Saga, DD5, or your favorite episode of the Dungeon Cast with the hashtag Dungeon Cast. Mm-hmm. That will be found, and a random winner will be selected. And on Instagram, find the post associated with the contest. Make sure you're following these accounts, obviously, but then like the post and start tagging people in the comments. One tag equals one entry per comment. And you, if they're doing an all art version of this book, that is the one you will win. Mm-hmm. If they're not, then you'll get the basic. I've only seen the basic, so I don't actually know if they're going to do an all
art. There is an all art, and it does look good.
Oh, okay, cool. Then, yeah, those we'll be giving away two different copies, one for each social media account. So get in your entries and help spread the word about the Dungeon Cast. We really appreciate it. Leave an iTunes review, do all that stuff. It really helps us out if you leave like YouTube comments and hit the like, subscribe, hit the bell, all that stuff that everybody always tells you to do. There's a reason everybody's always telling you to do it. So if you're a fan of this show and you like what we do, please help us out. You can also help us out by going to patreon.com/thedungeoncast, and you can check us out there with all our cool bonus content. We'll be shouting out patrons in another few episodes, but you can get early episodes, stuff like the Dungeon Chats, which is a whole different podcast, and then Flashbang and Surgeon, which is a whole different Live Play podcast. All our original music, OST, it's all there.
Indeed.
Exclusive merch. Hell yeah. Lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. Stuff I can't even mention in one sit down anymore because there's so much of it there. And we update it when we can. You can also read Will's episode notes, which I think we mentioned earlier on in this episode. We just kind of update it as we are able to. So, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. I think from there we can call it a game.
Yeah, let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.